You'll see.
Blog Talk Radio.
Frisdale. Thanks.
Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future.
Frisdale predicts in the future we will be ahead of time from now, which is future. We will be there in the future and think of today as the past. Whatever. This is Dale K from Spook Show. Welcome to Erie House Radio. I am here with...
I'm confused. I'm Dave Binkley from Weird, This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And practically sort of sitting next to me is...
It is I, got to go blade blade to you all.
As he jumps in on his pogo stick, I decided that sound effect is a pogo stick.
A pogo stick, okay.
That's a pogo
stick. And that's the horn. Get out of the way. Here he comes.
There you go.
Perfect.
The only pogo stick in the United States with a horn.
And we want to thank our listeners, man. We had, good stats last week. Best stats in like months. As far as listens, thank you. And a lot of live chatters tonight. Rob Smith, good old Bob. Fogsbane here tonight. Hi, hi.
And if you didn't make it last Saturday, check out our program there. Scott Davis is a special guest. He's in a upcoming movie, and I went to the premiere on Wednesday. And he's in a good half of the movie. And he just kind of blew me away. I was really smart. I mean, it's the guy I went to high school with. And so it was cool. But he also joined in, and we had a radio stage that Scott had been in about 2001. So, yeah, had a lot of fun. Come join us there in the archives, but after the show is over.
Yeah.
Dave, you said you were in high school with Scott?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, okay.
We did a couple plays together. He got the big parts. I got the bit parts.
Okay.
Yep.
We are
predicting the future tonight here on Erie House.
Yes. I
knew you were going to say that, Dale.
It's almost like you have precognition.
I thought he was going to say that, but I couldn't, you know, I wouldn't testify. I wouldn't testify. So one of the problems I personally have had about all this prophecy jazz is if you go somewhere and they go, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, do you subconsciously make these things happen? You know,
maybe.
To some degree,
some of us do.
I think if they predict an accident or something like that, yeah, you could be so overcautious that it could happen that way. Yeah.
Well, there was you don't see this often, but I saw this. It was a horror movie or some type. I forget what it was, and an airplane came barreling across an overpass on an interstate, blew up. Well, I don't think you could necessarily cause that unless you were the pilot. But, some of the smaller stuff, sure. Why not?
Hey, new listener tonight, Jay Clark's Novelty Vent and Chat. Welcome.
I wonder if they...
Well, hello there, call in Jay Clark's.
And tell us about monetizing our website. We don't know what that was. Remember a few weeks back, someone called in?
Oh, yeah. Who knows? Anyway, let's not give that any more attention than it deserves as we
make some
old-time radio tonight with shows about predicting the future.
So
we do.
So, Dave, where did you dig up Crisis from? Because I enjoyed
it. It's an interesting little program that I had found on the news groups a long time ago. And I just recently found a collection of them on the old-time radio researchers group. And really getting into them. They're just short. And again, they're from, as Dale would call it, the silver age of radio. And they're wonderful programs and great endings. And we have, this is our second one here already since I found them.
Yep, tonight. And we're also playing The Whistler and Suspense tonight. So, good shilling tales.
Mm-hmm. That's a whole lot of radio.
That's a whole lot of radio. Sorry, I had to talk to my rooster. I don't know what that was about.
I hope it wasn't laying an egg.
Yeah, don't get mad at him and strangle him or anything.
Yeah, if your rooster starts laying an egg, you might need to trade your rooster in at the store because you got juked. I'm no farmer, but I think you've been hoodwinked. That might be a prophecy.
Not bad from a city boy. Not bad from a city boy there.
It's almost like we're playing old-time radio tonight.
Almost.
It is. It is. So where are we going to kick off there, Mr. Dale?
Radio. Yep, where are you heading now?
You guys pick.
Oh. I like the Crisis.
I don't care. They're equally as good.
You like the Crisis?
Yes,
sure. Why not? Why not go to Crisis?
Let's have us
Jim
a little
French,
Crisis.
Another Jim French mystery. He wrote this particular series. He did other series as well. He did the a private detective, Harry Niles, and he did another series after that. And out of these, he writes a good deal of these, especially The Crisis. A good deal of these are written by him. So there we go.
Here we go. And this one's called Uncle John's Trouble. And it's from?
May 9th, 1974.
So they say.
So they say.
Sooner or later, when you least expect it, there comes a point of no return, a dead end from which there seems no escape, a moment in time, a moment of crisis. It's a time when every respectable middle-class American home had a parlor, and every parlor had a piano, usually an upright, and a child who took from a lady down the street. The notes of the Alexander family piano issue from behind the screen door, across the veranda, down the brick steps and across the lawn, and greet Edna Alexander as she drives in the driveway with a neat grass strip up the middle to catch the oil. She sits in the car a moment, drinking in the tranquil sound of her daughter Charlene practicing, grateful to be back in the world of the sane. In a moment, we return to the year 1936 and meet Edna and Charlene and Edna's Uncle John in tonight's tale of crisis, Uncle John's Trouble.
Mom. You take the paper bag. It's got his pajamas.
You look good.
Hey. You got the suitcase out in the car, and then this orderly comes rushing out. Oh, you forgot your pajamas, Mr. Buckman. I could have died. I just simply could have died.
Your room's all ready for you, Uncle John.
Good. What's for dinner?
They starve him.
Mama's homemade beef stock soup. Now, what do you think of that?
Eh?
It's beef and vegetable soup.
Oh, good. I could eat a horse and pull the wagon.
Come on, Uncle John. Get washed up for dinner.
Righto.
Oh, let me sit down for a second.
Oh, was it terrible, Mama?
Oh, they don't let you really see in, don't you know, but the ones they let wander around. Well, let's not go into it. The important thing is we have him back with us.
Did you see Dr. Roundtree?
Oh, yes. He was there. Had to sign his withdrawal. Well, he said Uncle John is perfectly harmless and that if he doesn't start getting those delusions again...
Delusions.
What?
Delusions?
Delusions. Well, if he doesn't get them again, he won't have to come back. Of course, if we could keep him at home, it wouldn't matter. No one else would know but us.
Oh, that's hopeless.
Well, we'll see, we'll see.
Do you think he's better?
I don't know. He's so deaf I can hardly talk and drive at the same time. I have to screech at him, so.
He looked happy.
He does look happy. Well, he's happy to be back with his loved ones. After all, we're all he has. Oh, if that's one of the neighbors.
I'll go.
Someone here?
Why don't you finish your dessert, Uncle John?
Good evening. I'm looking for the Alexander's residence.
Yes, that's us.
Oh, I'm Mr. Adams with the 20th Century Hearing Aid down on E Street. I believe a Miss Charlene Alexander left her name and address out at our exhibit, down to the business exhibit in the Armory last week.
Oh, that was me.
Oh.
I forgot all about it. Won't you come... could you wait here for just a second?
Well, who is it?
Mama, last week when I went to the business show in the Armory, remember? I left my name at a hearing aid exhibit, and the
You
man...
did what?
Well, I thought with Uncle John being so deaf and all...
And they sent a salesman.
Well, yes.
Well, you'll just have to tell him there's been a mistake or something. We can't afford one of those hearing aids. Much as he needs one.
Oh, but... Well, all right. I'm sorry, but I guess we're not interested right now.
I see. Well, may I just get some information for our files?
Well...
No obligation.
Well, okay.
The name of the person with the hearing problem?
Well, it's my uncle. Actually, my great-uncle, John Buckman.
Buckman. B-U-C-K...
M-A-N.
Uh-huh. And his address?
Oh, he lives here with us.
Oh, I see. Now, you see, we offer a free hearing aid test right here in the home. No obligation whatsoever.
Well, but you see, I don't think we'd be buying one right now.
I carry all my testing equipment right here in this case, you see.
You mean you have it right here?
That's right. You know, Miss Alexander, I'd like to just congratulate you, if I may. Not many young people as thoughtful of their elders as you are. You must love your great-uncle very much to have gone out of your way to inquire about something that would help him enjoy life so much more, even if he doesn't get a chance to hear again.
Well, Come on in. You can set up your apparatus in the parlor. I'll go get Uncle John.
Heaven's sake, what time is it? I thought that show would never let out.
Time? Why, who cares what infernal time it is in the 20th century?
Oh, Uncle John.
I have a long ways from being ready to return to 1936.
Did you like the movie, Uncle John?
I was spellbound, captivated. Do you have any notion of what it was like to sit there in that lovely theater and hear old Captain Bly hollering at Mr. Christian? And the water stood by, and the birds on that island, and you hating Charles Lawton, worst ever been in it.
There, Mama, see? The hearing aid was exactly the right thing.
My only thing is popcorn.
Popcorn?
Sounds louder than the soundtrack. Come on, in here. Come on right in here.
You want to go into pool this time of night?
Certainly. I buy it.
Well, might as well spend all the money in one night.
Come on, and three double chocolate sodas is going to break us. Oh, wow. The head cheese is on the premises himself. Good evening, Mr. Poole.
Well, hello, folks. Come on in. Say, Mr. Buckman, been some little time, hasn't it? Glad you're back. A counter or a booth?
Three at the bar, innkeeper.
Uncle John, please. Ladies don't sit at the counter.
Up you go, Edna.
Really?
Up you go there, Charlene. Say, Mr. Poole, should the proprietor be home counting his gold by this time of night?
He should be, but one of the soda jerks took sick just before the movie crowd come in.
We saw the movie ourselves.
Oh?
Yes, everything was first class, except the newsreel.
What was wrong with the newsreel?
Just a waste of time, that's all.
Yeah, these days you can get all the news on the radio, 6 o'clock.
That's not what I mean. All this campaign stuff. Roosevelt says this. Landon says that. Why, Alf Landon may as well go back to Husked Corps.
Oh, how's that, Mr. Buckman?
Oh, come on and order what you're going to have.
I'd be mighty interested in your political views, Mr. Buckman.
Ain't my views. Just the way it's going to be. Franklin D. Roosevelt is going to lick the pants off of Alf Landon in November, period.
You think so, Hon?
I know so.
Well, where do you get your inside information? Out at that nut house?
Come on, Charlie. We're leaving, Uncle John.
No offense, ladies. I just happen to be the Republican precinct chairman, and I'm naturally interested to hear his...
Well, nobody saying it isn't a fine thing to back the man of your choice. I'm just saying it's a lost cause. Roosevelt will run right over him.
Oh, come on, Uncle John.
I'll have 3 double chocolate sodas, Mr. Poole.
Coming out.
Honestly, Uncle John, you know how strong Mr. Poole is in the party. It's a wonder you come right in and first thing pick a fight with him.
And you are not distinguishing between opinion and fact. Mr. Landon's ignominious defeat is not my opinion. It is a fact.
The election's not till November, Uncle John.
Thank God, never mind.
All right, let's change the subject.
Tell you something else. You remember that newsreel picture about the big German airship?
The Hindenburg? We studied all about that in high school last month.
Yeah, well, don't go for no rides on it.
Why not?
She's a goner.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
What do you mean?
Honey, one of these nights, that big old gas bag is going to explode.
Uncle John, no one can predict the future.
All right, you just wait. Just wait.
Almost like it came true. Amazing.
Or was it?
Or was it? Have either of you gentlemen ever had an actual premonition in your life of any kind?
I feel I did. I explained this before when we talked about, it wasn't when we talked about premonitions, but when my grandfather passed, my watch had stopped, and I got to the funeral home 2 days later when they were having the viewing, and I told my aunt that I stopped on the day he passed, and she said, what time did it stop? I told her the time. She said, that's almost the exact moment that he passed.
Wow.
So I don't know if that was a premonition or a message, but it did happen. That's the closest to a premonition, I guess I would have. But I can't say I've ever had a dream that has come true as a premonition or something like that. But I believe it can possibly.
What about you, Gar? Anything that ever gave you, wow?
So far, every year I predicted Santa Claus is going to arrive, and he did.
That's amazing. That's astounding.
Wow.
Hasn't missed a year. Hasn't missed. No, I got a great track record for that one.
That's incredible.
It is.
And I had the nerve to call myself Chris Dale. Unmitigated gall, and here we have a true savant. I've had like weird feelings of like deja vu, but a sharp, like with a visual attached. Like I've had a dream of some insignificant moment, like turning and facing a certain way with certain scenery or whatever, and then having that happen like months later, and go, wow, I dreamt this. Is this significant? And it was like a passing notion, though. Nothing of importance that I could recognize was attached to that feeling of deja vu.
I did that in a dream once. I woke up and my back was out of whack. Yeah.
I dreamt I ate a giant
back whack attack. Back whack attack. That's what that was.
I dreamt I ate a giant marshmallow. And
yeah,
my ex-wife was gone.
Whoa. That leads to that weird advertising on your page. But anyway.
Yeah.
No.
I don't see.
Like I said earlier, I feel that a lot of the time the premonitions, you know, are we helping them along if we get one? Now, deja vu, that's crazy. I have deja vu all the time, but that's in my own house, trying to figure out why I walked into that room. I've been here before, but I don't know why.
I think premonition kind of makes some interesting stories, though. It does make a lot of interesting stories. And I honestly believe there are some people that are, I don't know if you want to call them psychic or they can see things.
What, deranged?
No. I didn't say psychic.
No, not deranged.
Psychic.
Oh. Uh-huh.
They can see things that maybe just ahead of, even if it's sometimes a little bit ahead of what happens or what we know of.
Yeah.
Here's the big kicker on all that is, none of these people that can see the future have made millions on the lottery. So I'm going, yeah, sure.
Well, maybe they don't feel they should. I mean, if you ever seen Early Edition, the guy got the next day's newspaper. He never made money off of that. And he didn't feel it was right. He's a hero.
Yeah. Not everybody's like you, Gar, and all about the money.
I'm living the dream. Boy, boy. Living the dream.
If I have ever said anything more stupid than I just said, let me know, because that was that was pretty freaking dumb.
Woohoo! Man.
Oh, boy.
I've hit more glass ceilings. You know, I tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a big one. You know, if you run across someone and they have certain psychic abilities, one thing that would be, you know, keen on the list is like, well, that's cool. Well, okay, this was how I understand it, is if you have some type of benefited ability, you're to help people with whatever their problems are, but it's not supposed to benefit you directly.
That's an interesting notion.
I also think that's what I feel. Those people that may be a bit psychic, it's not that they see everything, and they may not see things involving themselves.
True. Maybe you're a I think you're a karma guy, Gar. That's a very karmatic viewpoint, I think. Karmatic, is that a word? I don't know. Maybe folks who have incredible insight, maybe they can't fully control what they perceive.
But see, following that pursuit, I would definitely pay a friend of mine, not Rob Smith Jr., but I would definitely pay a friend of mine $5 to ask me for them, what are the winning lottery numbers? Not that I would use them, you see, but...
Well, just to know. Yeah, inquiring minds want to know.
Uh-huh.
The numbers guy.
Yeah. You pay a friend of yours $5 and go, hey, I can't ask myself. You ask me, and we'll see what happens. And we'll both buy a lottery ticket and see how it goes.
I didn't know you liked caramels. Anyway.
I didn't either.
Yeah,
okay.
Ask Rob. He knows. Anyway,
ask Rob anything.
Yeah. Let's wrap up. Uncle Josh.
I wouldn't even ask him what's for dinner. I tell you.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. More fun. Uncle John's trouble. Blah, blah.
From Crisis, we'll be back.
This all didn't fall on my shoulders. Oh, if only your father were alive. Well, he's my flesh and blood, so I guess he's my responsibility.
What is it now, Mama?
I was on the telephone with Dr. Roundtree.
Oh.
I described what Uncle John's been doing, and I'm afraid he's going to have to go back in.
Oh, Mama, no.
He's been out for almost a month now, and he's just not himself. Prophesying. Why, it's almost sacrilegious.
But he isn't hurting anyone.
He's hurting himself, Charlene. And he's making us a laughingstock.
Lots of people play their hunches.
Do you know what he said to me today after you went off to school? He said he's going to start buying our tires.
Tires?
Said the time will come when a tire would fetch more than $25. And he wants us to move to a farm where we can have dairy cows so as to have plenty of butter. Said butter will be like gold. What do you think of that?
I don't know.
No, he is not one bit better. My time before, at least he just went around not talking and not knowing what day it was.
But he's been so happy since he's been out. And that hearing aid has just opened up a whole new way of life for him.
Well, we are going to have to take that back.
Mother!
That thing cost $108.59. And if he has to go back to Ricketts Sanitarium, we'll have to sell the car. I'll be taking it washing and ironing.
I could give piano lessons.
You may have to, Charlene. Wait, that's him coming in.
Ah, glad you're both here. Family Council of War, it's very important.
What do you want, Uncle John?
Family Council of War, sit down, Edna. Close the piano lid, Charlie, my dear.
Why?
People who sit at open piano keyboards are drawn to pluck the keys. It's an irresistible reflex.
What is it, Uncle John?
All right. Of late, you have no doubt been fearing for my sanity.
No, Uncle John, but...
Let's be frank, my dear. I am the target of a whispering campaign around town. And no doubt it is reflecting on you, my two dearest and only kith and kin.
We love you, Uncle John.
Hear me out. What I have said, because what I have heard, I have heard. What I have said has been said only in the spirit of helpfulness and fraternity. But a prophet is without honor in his own land.
Uncle John, I talked with Dr. Roundtree this afternoon.
Good. Give him my best regards. But before you consign me once again to the bughouse, hear me out. Now, family, we have a hole to dig.
A hole to dig?
In the backyard.
Why, Uncle John?
For a mob shelter.
Oh, dear Lord.
War is coming, Edna. Charlene, you're old enough to hear this.
I'm listening, Uncle John.
There will be cities destroyed this time. There will be innocent people killed.
All right, Uncle John, we'll do whatever you say.
Who are we going to be fighting with?
The Germans and the Japanese.
The Japanese?
So I've been down to Harbison's Hardware, and the truck will be out in the morning.
What truck? What truck will be out in the morning?
Mr. Harbison's truck with our first load of cement bags.
Just got to see it our way, Mr. Adams.
Well, believe me, I do see it your way, Mrs. Alexander.
They won't let him wear a hearing aid in the institution. And we've got no use for it.
But surely Mr. Buckman will be coming out someday.
No. No, he won't.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry to hear that.
Well, a man with Uncle John's trouble is too far gone, they say. So that's why I'm asking you to take it back.
Well, under the circumstances...
We'd be so grateful.
Of course, it's used. I, perhaps could allow you $20.
$20? Is that all? Well, that's $108.
Well, actually, I'm not permitted to take in used instruments at all, but under the circumstances...
No, I'll run an ad in the paper. I can certainly sell it for more than that.
Election news? Uncle John was right. Roosevelt won by a landslide. Maybe Uncle John really knew. Mama? What is it?
I've just been to the doctor's. Uncle John is dead.
Dead? How could he be?
They were giving him those electric shock treatments, and he had a heart attack.
Oh. Oh, poor Uncle John.
I've been just driving around in the rain for an hour thinking. And you know what, Charlene? It's best.
How can you say that?
The poor man would never be right again. We loved him and took care of him, and he loved us. But there was something wrong in his head, and everything was tried. The Lord took him, and it was a mercy. Now, that's what I believe.
Alexander, you remember me, Mr. Adams, 20th Century Hearing Center?
Of course. Come on in.
Thank you. Lovely spring evening. I'm just out for a walk. Found myself in the neighborhood, so I thought I'd stop by. How's your Uncle John?
You didn't hear? He passed away last November.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
And your mother?
Oh, she's fine.
You know, ever since she was in the store last, I've been wanting to see if we couldn't make some kind of arrangement on that instrument. Or did she sell it?
Oh, no, she's...
Oh, no! Charlene, come here!
Oh, my gosh, excuse me, Mr. Adams.
It's the Hindenburg. It's exploded at Lakehurst, New Jersey.
It's one of the worst catastrophes in the world. It always seems to displace 4 or 500 feet into the sky, and it's a terrific
great
flame, and the smoke and the flames
now. Mother, do you know what I'm remembering? That night last year at Poole's after mutiny on the Bounty.
Oh, I know. Uncle John predicted this, and it's happened. Oh, it's horrible.
Excuse me. Is everything all right?
All right. The Hindenburg's blown up. Well, what are you doing here?
Do you remember Mr. Adams, Mama, from the hearing aid store?
Oh, yes.
Well, yes. I was just telling your daughter, Mrs. Alexander, that I've been thinking perhaps I could arrange a little more generous allowance on that instrument of Mr. Buckman's.
Oh? Well, that's very thoughtful of you, I'm sure.
Mama.
However, I've decided not to sell it.
Oh, is that so?
You see, I've been wearing it for 6 months or so.
It really works good, Mama says.
In fact, it works better than I ever thought it could. So thank you very kindly anyway, Mr. Adams. But no, we're not that hard-pressed.
Well, I didn't mean to imply, but, well, I'm happy someone's getting some use out of it. That model's a very fine instrument, although, you know, the same company has brought out its new 1937 line, and there's some wonderful new improvements.
No thanks all the same. I'll keep this one.
Well, fine. I'll leave you to your radio, Mrs. Alexander. Now, if you ever need service, batteries, or that sort of thing, just call me and I'll be glad to bring them by.
I'll see you to the door, Mr. Adams.
I heard you mention Poole's. You know, I'd be pleased to walk you down to Poole's for an ice cream since you warm evening, Mrs. Alexander.
Hello, Daily Sentinel. Let me talk to the editor. Hello, Mr. Editor. I want to give you a piece of news, something to follow up on for your paper. Now, up in Massachusetts, in a town called Hyannisport, there's a family name of Kennedy. Yes, I believe Mr. Kennedy was just appointed ambassador somewhere. Well, it doesn't matter. What I want to tell you is about one of his boys. John. Yes. Now listen, this is terribly important. It's a matter of life and death. Something's going to happen. What? This is Mrs. Alexander. Now, if you're ready, I'm going to dictate. What? Where did I hear this? You'd be surprised, mister. You'd be surprised. I just happen to know. Let's say it runs in the family. Now, here's what I want you to take down. this boy, John Kennedy.
Well, by now, we know the nature of Uncle John's trouble. He was deaf. That's all. Just deaf. But that 1936 model hearing aid, well now, that's something else. Something else indeed. Uncle John's Trouble featured Merrill Male as Uncle John and as Mr. Adams, Pat French as Edna Alexander, Lee Posh as Charlene, and Bill Swain as Mr. Poole, and was written and directed by yours truly, Jim French.
Snake drummer music.
A real classic flute player.
Lulling me to consciousness. That was Uncle John's Trouble. Now, was the hearing aid like kind of magical, or do you think it was science fictional, the way it you could predict the future?
No, it was magic.
What if it energized a certain part of his brain? We don't use that much of our brain. I don't know why. But what
Speak
if it,
for
what
yourself.
If it, well.
I'm kidding.
Well.
Oh, gosh.
You're the one. Well, anyway. So, yeah. Let's just say it energized a certain part of his brain, and all of a sudden he got a little bit more information than most people. Sure.
Or maybe it's an antenna into catches future radio waves. Ooh.
Ooh, I didn't think of that. That's neat.
Ooh.
That's a good concept.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, caught radio waves before they existed. Yeah,
there you go. Yeah. Why not? It could happen.
Radio existed in 38.
It did.
Here's a weird thing.
Yes,
before we get into our moral of the story, I wanted to toss this up. In the late 1990s, I met a veteran at the VA, and we talked. And I found out that the guy in the late 1990s at the VA hospital was actually being administered shock treatments. I was like, holy crap. And he said, it wasn't that bad, except the first few days, you don't remember where you've been. I'm like, I'm not getting shock treatments now, and I got that going on.
Or like in Strange Brew when the McKenzie brothers were doing it to each other.
Yeah.
That's possible.
You know.
G.G. Sci Papers said, I didn't think about a science fiction possibility. Maybe the future was sending signals back. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's our cue to learn something even further. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
If you somehow end up with the gift of prophecy, you can only... It can only profit you if you keep it to yourself.
Show starts in 3 minutes.
What a
game. There we go. Yes. It hasn't started yet.
Was that prophecy? The guy was saying the show started?
I hope
that's
not.
That's a prophet that woke up a day late.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
prophecy is foresight. So I guess hindsight would be...
Yes, it was all about dreams.
There you go.
I used to have a lot of hindsight, but I kept getting slapped.
Whoa. Careful. Whoa. Careful. Easy.
Hey, CW's not on tonight. I'm safe.
Yeah.
She'll be listening later. You're going to catch heck, Dave.
Probably. Sorry, CW.
No, but I'm here. And you know
how
jealous I am.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
As if you didn't do a little hindsighting sighting yourself, you know.
So,
I know better than that.
I was a little bit crazy that in it wasn't that long ago, the 1990s. Well, no, wait. Okay, it's 22 years ago. But, or 30 years ago.
But for us,
but
not that long.
But that they were still using something as almost unscientific as shooting electrical pulses into your brain. I mean, that's some Frankenstein monster stuff there. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think that was made clear in the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Mm-hmm.
Are they still using electroshock therapy?
I don't think so. I think that's
no,
cruel.
That's what I was saying. In the 1990s, at a cutting-edge medical facility, they were still shocking people in their brain.
Not a fan. Not a fan.
Not a fan.
No. I wouldn't do that to another human being. Not a fan. Can't do it. Why are you chuckling?
Because that screams to the. There was a psychiatric experiment once about these people that they were supposed to give other people a shock if they were incorrect in answering a question or something like that. It was a psychological.
Oh, that was Ghostbusters 2, I think.
But Ghostbusters 2 also took that out of reality. That was a real thing that was going on, and the people that were putting the voltage out were actually starting to get rather maniacal and power hungry, and they would start doing it more and more and more, not understanding that.
I know some people, if they took that, they'd be electrocuted. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. So. That's a weird. I don't know.
I did. On that happy note, we got more complete radio shows for you tonight.
Yep.
There you go.
And I propose the Whistler next.
Okay, Whistler's fine. We can finish up the evening with suspense.
Sure.
Good.
This one has an interesting title, intriguing. Sleep, my pretty one. Sleep. Whoa. We just lost Dave. He'll be back, I'm sure.
Are we doing the Whistler or suspense?
We are doing Whistler, sleep, my pretty one next. And
okay.
We'll
right,
give Dave an opportunity
then...
to call back in and reconnect.
All right.
And...
This is a fun one.
Yeah? You've had the sneak preview. I have not. So I get to enjoy this for the first time.
Yes. Oddly, what this is the this Whistler episode involves a lot of suspense.
How about that? Well, there he is, just in time to help us out here with this episode of the Whistler. Hi, Dave. Welcome back.
I'm back.
Wash your hands.
Stupid.
Wash your hands.
Stupid.
And your feet.
Google
and
voice.
Your feet.
And my feet?
Feet.
I can't reach my feet.
Yeah.
Well, I tried it once. I hired someone to do it. I reached my feet up, but you know, I could only get them one at a time. Once I tried to do it two at a time and just fell down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I have that trouble too.
Anyway, this episode of The Whistler is from
September 24th, 1947.
You betcha.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I am The Whistler. And I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. But first, an important announcement. Beginning next Wednesday, The Whistler will come to you at a new time. 1/2 hour earlier, 7:30 Pacific Coast Time. Same station, same day. Only the time will change. Remember, beginning next Wednesday, tune in The Whistler 1/2 hour earlier. And now The Whistler's strange story. Sleep, my pretty one.
A few months before, Jean would have dismissed the whole idea of having her fortune told as ridiculous. But there was a difference now. Yes. 3 months ago, the smart little ring on the third finger of her left hand wasn't there. And the future was something she could take or leave alone. But she had to admit now that she was pretty much like any other girl in love. That sane, scientific thing somehow seemed a little unimportant. That with marriage just around the corner, things like tea room fortune tellers suddenly seemed important and exciting. So she gave in without argument when her friend Betty suggested they leave their table and visit Madame Zorga in her alcove behind the fringed red curtains in the corner. And as the old woman gazed into her crystal and rambled on, Jean found somehow she was taking it all seriously. A little too seriously.
On the crystal with me.
Max would be terribly shocked if he knew I was doing this.
Please, signorina.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ah, it's a coming. They part now, the clouds part. I see a number. The number 13, and now the number 11. It is a date. The 13th day of the 11th month.
November 13th?
I gaze deeper. Again the crystal clears, and I see the letter J. And now the letter V.
Your initials, Jean. What? How can she? I told you. Go on, Madame Zorga.
I cannot go on.
Oh, but there must be
I ever told you. The image fades. The clouds close in. The reading, she's finished.
Is something wrong? Of course there is. It serves me right for falling for this hocus-pocus.
It's a no hocus-pocus, signorina. If you must know, I will tell you. There is no future for J.V. after the 13th day of November.
Why, that's this week. Never mind, Betty. Here you are, madam. I better get back to the laboratory. It's late. And don't mention this to Max, will you, dear? If he ever caught me going to fortune tellers, he'd get himself a new lab assistant and a new fiancé. Oh, sorry, I'm late, darling. I had lunch with Betty, and she insisted on a tea room across town, and you know how that is.
Mm-hmm.
There. Miss me, Doctor?
Oh, that's a silly question. Of course I miss you, dear. Hand me that beaker, will you?
Huh? Oh.
I've been up to my ears around here.
Oh, here you are.
Thanks. Isn't I?
Oh, excuse me.
Where'd you pick up the cord?
I don't know.
Oh, I have to do something for it.
May I see you a minute, Mitcher?
Oh, yes, Dr. Olson. I'll be with you in a minute, dear.
All right.
Mitcher, Dr. Davies tells me you want to try your drug on one of his encephalitis patients.
Oh, that's right. The man's been in a coma for 3 weeks. I think E-37 can cure him.
You think? That's no basis for administering an untried drug.
But it looks like he hasn't a chance otherwise.
Nevertheless, as head of this institute, I'm afraid I'll have to refuse you my permission. The fact that you injected a bunch of rats with the virus of sleeping
sickness... But you don't understand, Doctor. Those rats had sleeping sickness with all the symptoms. Double vision, sleepiness, fever. E-37 cured every last one.
That doesn't mean it's safe for a human being. I'd hoped you'd remember the last hopeless patient it was tried on. How long did he last, Mitcher? Was it 10 seconds or 20?
I told you I found what was wrong. I've eliminated the toxic factor.
You've eliminated the toxic factor. Well, I'm glad to hear that. It's a highly constructive development, but it still is an experiment, and this institute will not experiment with human lives. I absolutely forbid you giving Davies this drug. That's final.
Institute will not experiment.
I couldn't help hearing it, Max. The transom.
Yeah. Seems, my love, that my work for the past year has been dedicated to a batch of white rats.
There ought to be a way.
There is, just one. The drug's got to be proven on a human patient. Olson knows that. For thousands of years, encephalitis has been killing human beings like dogs, and Olson says we can't afford to take a chance.
Well, he's thinking of the Institute.
I'm thinking of humanity. There's always a risk. That's how we learn. That's how we progress. That's science. Jean.
Yes?
Jean, will you help me?
Well, of course, darling.
I'm going to test my formula. I can make the test, and Olson need never know about it.
What kind of a test?
On a human subject.
What? But how can you...
Darling, listen to me. You love me.
Well, yes, Max.
You trust me.
Trust you?
You've got to have faith in me, darling. It means everything now.
Of course I have faith in you, Max.
I have an aunt in Dorset, Vermont. We can drive up there tonight.
But I don't understand, Max. How can you make a test on a human subject? Who can...
Leave that to me, darling. I'm going to inject the subject with the virus, then follow it at the peak of the attack with E-37. The only way I can show Olson.
But you haven't told me who you...
You said you trusted me, Jean. Did you mean it?
Yes, Max.
Good. Come on now. Let's start packing the equipment.
Oh, careful with that vial, Jean. Take us days to reproduce that drug.
I'm wrapping it in cotton. Oh, excuse me. There you are, Max.
Well, that ought to do it. You can close up the bag.
All right.
Well, hold still a moment, dear.
Why? What do you...
Just hold still.
Max, what is this?
Giving you a shot. That cold of yours. Can't have you sick at a time like this.
I feel a little faint.
I know. It always affects you this way. There. That's why I didn't warn you.
I don't like injections, Max. Why did you...
I told you, dear. It's for your cold. You better have faith in the doctor, don't
you? Yes. Yes, Max. Of course.
Good. Feel better now?
Yes, I suppose so.
Well, let's go then. It's a 5 or 6 hour drive.
Max, aren't you going to leave word where we're going?
Well, of course not. I don't want anyone to know where we are or what we're doing until it's over.
With the prologue of Sleep, My Pretty One, the Signal Oil Company brings you another strange story by The Whistler. But now a word to you folks who did some traveling throughout the Pacific Coast states this summer. In addition to beautiful scenery, you probably noticed two other things. One, that wherever you drove, you found friendly, dealer-owned Signal service stations. And two, that from Canada to Mexico, Signal gasoline is known as the Go Farther gasoline. Now, naturally, we're mighty proud of Signal's good mileage. But even more so, we're proud of the thing which makes that mileage possible. I'm talking about the extra efficiency Signal gasoline gets from your motor. For after all, extra motor efficiency also means more thrilling pickup, more silent, responsive power. The things that make driving so much more fun. Yes, it's a fact. Extra driving pleasure is the result of the same features a gasoline must have to give you mileage. The very thing Signal gasoline is famous for. That's why we say, to be sure of the tops in gasoline quality, there are just two things to remember. One, it takes extra quality to go farther. And two, Signal is the famous Go Farther gasoline. And now back to the Whistler.
So the decision is made, Gene. and you're on your way now to the little farmhouse in southern Vermont, where it will be decided, rules or no rules, whether the contents of the cotton-wrapped vial in Max's valise is a life-saving drug or a deadly poison. There was no alternative. You had to agree to help Max now, of all times, when he needs you most. But as you guide the car north through the chill November night, you can't help feeling uneasy, as if something is terribly wrong. You wonder about the human subject he's so vague about, his fanatic zeal for his work, his determination that science must come before all else. You glance sidewise at him, at the solid set of his jaw.
What's the matter, dear?
Nothing.
Better keep your eye on the road.
Yes.
It's nice of you to do the driving. These blasted new glasses, I'm not used to them yet.
I don't mind. Max.
Yes?
You're sure you're quite right in this?
Hmm?
I mean, well, if Dr. Olson were to find out, you'd lose your position.
If I succeed, Olson won't matter much. I'll have office from every institute in the country.
And if you fail?
You'll matter even less.
Oh,
watch out!
Max!
Good Lord, Jean, watch the road.
I don't know, Max.
What's the matter?
That car. For a moment, I thought I saw two of them.
Careful now, the road's pretty narrow.
I can see, thank you.
Well, there's the house up ahead. Well, I'm glad the snow held off. We're in for a blizzard. There we are. There's the old pump house, the crab apple tree. Now watch it, there's an old stump on the right.
If you don't mind, Max, I've just driven 200 miles of ice-covered road safely. I think I can handle a country lane without advice.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, Max. I don't know what's the matter with me. I don't feel like myself.
Well, well, this must be Jean.
How do you do?
Come in. I declare, Max, you got mighty good taste.
I've been telling you.
You must be froze to the bone. Well, there's plenty of hot coffee in the kitchen. Now make yourself to home, folks, and I'll take your things up to your room.
Oh, don't bother.
And get out some extra blankets.
No, she can't hear you, Jean.
What?
She's stone deaf. Best to just let her go her own way. She will anyhow.
I see.
Come on to the kitchen. I got to get this stuff on ice.
I'm glad we're warm again. I'm so drowsy, though.
Well, you're just tired, dear.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, here we are. Same old icebox. I'll have to clear a place here at the back for the vials. You got them there?
Right here.
Good.
Max, I don't like to keep asking this, but...
What is it?
Where do you expect to find anyone with sleeping sickness around here?
I don't.
What?
Well, it's very simple. Since there are no cases of encephalitis at my disposal, there's only one answer. To create one.
Max.
To inject a subject with the virus, then, after a good case is developed, E37.
But we're completely isolated here. Where can you find...
I found the subject, Jean.
No.
Now, please let it go at that, will you?
Max!
Look what you've done!
It slipped. I'm sorry.
Why did it have to be this one? E37, Jean, the cure. Every bit of it was in that vial.
Max, listen to me. Maybe it's better this way. Maybe you'd better forget about E37. Treat the patient in the ordinary way. There must be a hospital somewhere.
Now, don't be ridiculous. E37 was our only chance. I injected 20,000 units of sleeping sickness virus.
A fatal
dose?
Yes,
a fatal dose. We've got to start work on another batch of E37 right now. Come on.
You follow Max down the dim old hallway in a daze, like a figure in a nightmare. The kind where you run slowly as if through water, trying to escape, while nameless shapes come closer and closer. And though you still refuse to believe, to recognize it, one of the shapes is fear.
Here we are.
Why, it's a laboratory.
It used to be Aunt Agnes' pantry. She turned it into a lab for me when I was a boy. Self-defense, in a way. I was always mixing chemicals in her kitchen.
But, Max, this is nothing like your laboratory in town. How can you...
Sure, it's crude, but it's all we've got. Between what I brought and what's here, we can duplicate E37. With a little luck. How tired are you, Jean?
I'm all right.
Once we start the process, we can't let up for a second.
Let's get to work.
So, like, his girlfriend, right? His girlfriend. And he's using her as a guinea pig? What?
Unless he did it on himself, we don't know for sure yet. Maybe he did it to his aunt who couldn't, who's deaf, who's deaf.
Huh? What?
Hey, I have a little 35
I'm still trying
seconds.
To figure out.
Go ahead.
How do you tell if a rat has double vision? How?
A rat?
A rat, R-A-T, a rat. In the
yeah,
in the early part of the story, he said that the rats had double vision. I'm like, how could you tell?
They kept running their heads into the cheese without eating it. I don't know.
Yeah, could be.
That could be snow blindness. We don't know what. I don't know.
Hey, I have a 35-second clip I'd like to play right here. I just pulled down.
All
here
right.
It comes. Come on, you can do this.
I am the Whistler. And I walk by night. I have to. How can I sleep with all that doggone whistling going on?
Who is that? Is that Red Skelton?
That's Sir Frederick Gass from the Spike Jonze Show.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And, of course, who could forget Jack Benny, the fiddler?
The fiddler, yes.
Yeah.
That was great.
That's back in the archives there. Yes, indeed.
Yep. And perhaps we'll look that episode up for you later. See.
So I'm not sure who his victim is here, but it can only be one of three people.
That's right.
Either his aunt, the girlfriend, which he already gave a couple of shots to, or himself. I don't have a premonition.
It could also be the ghostwriter. Could be a ghostwriter.
Well, it
we don't
could
know
be,
that.
But can a ghost get a shot? I don't know.
I don't know. We'll ponder that while we hear the conclusion of the Whistler, Sleep, My Pretty One.
And so it begins, Jean. It's midnight when the two of you have straightened out the dusty laboratory, cleaned the glassware, the retorts, and Bunsen burners. 3 a.m. when the first solution is ready to run.
Keep an eye on the filtrate here. I'm going to make another setup.
Yes, Max. The autoclave's working.
Good. Well, how do you feel?
Just tired.
Of course you're tired. So am I. We'll make it, though, Jean. Don't worry. We'll make it. Make a note of that, will you?
Right. November 10th, 5:20 a.m. First dilution complete. 100 cc. Max.
What's the matter?
My eyes. I don't know. I can't seem to focus.
Sit down and rest a minute. You'll be all right.
November 11th. 10:15 a.m. Fourth distillate just coming off.
No, it's November 12th, dear.
What?
You've lost a day somewhere.
Of course. I don't seem to be conscious of time anymore.
Yeah. If I ever get through this, I'm going to build a monument to black coffee.
It hasn't any effect on me anymore.
What time is it now?
4 p.m.
It's 26 hours since we ran that solution. Ought to be ripe by now. You got the beaker ready?
Yes. Here, Max. Sterilize.
All right.
Put it on the burner, will you?
All right.
That's it. Now we wait some more. Oh, time. What a maddening dimension. You hurry. You're in a frenzy of haste. But everything has to go at its own rate. You can't hurry a fire or a chemical reaction. And while you wait for them, a virus is multiplying, increasing, threatening a brain, life.
Mac!
What?
Please don't talk about it. Not now. Give me a cigarette, will you?
Yeah, of course.
Thanks.
And a light. Steady. What? Your hand's shaking like a leaf.
I just can't seem to control them.
Yeah. I guess I'm pretty tense, too. Equipment's obsolete. It's a gamble any way you look at it. But we've got a good chance.
You've ever been afraid of taking chances? Have you, Max?
Why do you say that?
Even if it meant gambling with our happiness, your work would come first. Science comes before everything, doesn't it, Max?
That's not a fair question.
I think it's appropriate right now.
What do you mean?
I love you, Max. I'll always love you, no matter what happens. I want you to know that.
Jean, this is no time to...
There's still time to drop this crazy business. There's still time to give the patient one of the standard treatments.
What are you talking about?
Oh, Max, let me call Dr. Olson.
Oh, I see. You're giving up, huh?
It's not that much.
Well, I'm not giving up. We're going through with this. If my experiment's successful, I want to know that E-37 alone is responsible. And if not...
Go on, Max. What if it isn't?
Then I'll just have to face the music.
I see.
Where are you going?
To get some more coffee.
You're glad the telephone's at the other end of the house, that you'll have a chance to get the call through to Dr. Olson in Boston before Max has a chance to stop you. You wait for the operator to answer, trying to fit the words together in a way that will tell Olson the story without going too hard on Max. There's no other explanation, is there, Jean? The dull pain in the back of your head, the nervous disturbance, the deadly fatigue, the double vision can mean only one thing.
Why, Jean.
Oh, Aunt Agnes.
Land, girl, not trying to make a phone call, are you? Why, the lines have been down for hours, come the storm.
Oh, no.
Oh, you look all worn out, child, and no wonder. The way you two been working.
Wait.
Oh, you
listen to me, Aunt Agnes.
Some rest, child.
Listen
never
to me.
Never see such dark circles under anybody's eyes.
Agnes, listen.
Why are you shaking me like that? What's the matter, child?
Why... I'll write a note. There's paper and pencil by the phone. Watch, Aunt Agnes. Watch.
Eh? What are you writing? Oh, Max trying dangerous experiment.
That's right.
Stop him.
It's life and death. My life and my death.
Stop him, my land.
You understand
that? I wouldn't
that?
Dream of such a thing.
Life
ever
and death.
Ever interfered with his doings. Not even after time and I blew out the side of the barn.
Please.
Well, the rest of the family was
all
mad at him. For
my
one
life.
Thing or another, but not me. That's oh. Science, you know. Max says that's the way we learn. Jean, wait. Now, why'd she run off like that?
You run blindly out of the house, down the snow-covered path to the shed where you left the car. There's only one way now, Jean. You've got to get away, to leave him once and for all. You've decided now that he's a man without a heart, that you were foolish to have fallen in love with him, and there's a stabbing cold feeling inside that tells you you've discovered it too late. And as you fumble for the car keys, the nightmare you've lived through for the past few days comes back in a rush.
I'll inject the subject with the virus, and after a good case is developed, E-37.
How long did the patient last, Mitchell? Was it 10 seconds or 20?
Hold still, dear. Giving you a shot for that cold of yours. Double vision, sleepiness, fever.
That car. I saw two of them.
20,000 units of virus. The drug is our only chance.
I don't know what's the matter with me. I don't feel like myself.
There's no future for JV after the 13th day of November. No future, no future.
Don't you starve. Please,
Jean, what on earth are you doing out here? Where do you think you're going?
Max, I thought if I could reach Dr. Olson. I wanted to get someone some help.
We settled that once.
I know,
there's no help outside, only here. Now, where's the oxalate?
On the top shelf of the cupboard.
I looked there. You'd better come and show me.
All right, Max. I'll come.
What time is it, Jean?
About 9.
The hypodermic and the sterilizer?
No.
Well, put it in. Put it in. We're almost ready. Now, where are the notes?
Notes? Oh, here.
Let's see. Virus injected Monday, November 10th. Disease approaches critical state. That's pretty close. Better make the final entry, Jean. Or next final while I finish here.
All right.
Ready now?
Yes, Max.
Preparing to administer anti-encephalitic drug E37 subject. Work commenced on drug at 1 a.m. November 10th. Completed at 9 p.m. November 12th.
Your hand trembles as you write. As you watch Max rise, walk slowly to the sterilizer, lift the lid and remove the hypodermic.
There's no future for JV after the 13th day of November.
You fight it out of your mind. Struggle against the fear that gripped you as Max turns, hypodermic in hand. Everything begins to waver before your eyes. You drop the journal.
I'll be over in a minute, Jean. See, I simply put the needle in the solution. Release the plunger. And then...
No. No, Max.
Jean.
Please.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story. Meantime, a word to you drivers. You've heard me tell how Signal has grown from a mere handful of dealers in Southern California to almost 2,000 Signal stations serving 6 western states from Canada to Mexico. Well, recently I was going through some letters from you listeners to see if I could put my finger on the answer for the ever-increasing preference for Signal. A driver from Long Beach wrote, "Since switching to Signal, I've been checking my mileage, and my car does go farther with Signal." Another wrote, "My 1939 Chrysler is still purring like a kitten on Signal gasoline." And still another said, "Whether I drive in for a tank full of gas or air for the tires, Signal dealers give me the same courteous treatment every time." Well, there you have it. Some drivers praise the conscientious service at dealer-owned Signal stations. Others rave about the quality of Signal products. I have a hunch it's a combination of both. But for the best answer, why don't you try a tank full of Signal gasoline? My bet is that once you do, you too will want to join the ever-increasing number of drivers who are switching to Signal. And now back to the Whistler.
It was too much, Jean, the sight of Max standing there with a needle. Gradually, you become aware of the room you're in. A pretty bright room with organdy curtains and the green leaves of an apple tree showing outside the window. The sun is pouring in now, and suddenly you realize it's afternoon sun.
No, I think she's coming around.
What?
I say, I think she's... No, never mind, Aunt Agnes. Well, it's about time.
Max.
You've slept the clock around, young lady. It's after 3.
Max, it's all over. I'm all right.
Yes, it's over, darling. You're all right. And we've won. Oh, there's the doorbell, Aunt Agnes.
What?
The doorbell. Doorbell.
Oh, doorbell. I expect it's the judge. I'll sit him down in the parlor.
Good. I told the judge to drop by on his way home from town, dear. Thought we might make an appointment. That is, if you don't mind changing your name on an unlucky day like the 13th.
Change my name. My initials on the...
Unless you'd rather...
No, Max, you haven't told me. What happened? What did you do?
Well, if you hadn't fainted when you did, you'd have seen. Within 5 minutes after I took that injection, I was feeling better.
You?
And 4 hours later, there wasn't a trace of sleeping sickness in my blood.
Oh, Max. Max, darling. Yeah.
That's science, darling. You risk a little to gain a lot.
That whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, which will come to you half an hour earlier, beginning next Wednesday at 7:30 Pacific Coast Time. The Whistler is brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil and fine quality automotive accessories. Featured in tonight's story were Gene Bates and Elliot Lewis. The Whistler was produced by George W. Allen with story by Ruth Bourne, music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. Marvin Miller speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Aw, that was a happy ending. Damn it.
Well, you can't lose them all.
Well. Maybe next time.
Maybe.
More gore and guts.
But we could still win with a moral of the story.
We do have that.
Yes.
Of course, if one was to have a moral, one should probably have introductory moral music.
That would make sense.
He said while scrolling, Erie House Radio probably presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
You can't hurry a chemical reaction or a fire, but you can run out and get marshmallows.
Don't eat them.
You can run out and get marshmallows, but you better pick up the chocolate and graham crackers to go with it.
And you got to watch the Stay Puffed marshmallows. Those are the ones you got to watch.
Those are the dangerous
Man.
Ones, yeah.
Yes, they're dangerous.
Apparently they bite back. I don't know.
Yes, they do. I've seen it. It must be real. Yeah.
Must be.
Evil predictions.
And yet, we have another tale yet to go.
That we do, and who knows, maybe even more time to horse around a little bit. We've got Suspense, one of my favorite.
What about this? I was going to say this is starring Ronald Coleman. So that interesting suspense coming up with Ronald Coleman.
Yeah, it's called Noose of Coinky Dinky, or Coincidence. And it's from?
Oh, yeah. And it's from April 7th, 1949.
That's what two Eskimos told me. Yeah.
Suspense. This is the man in black, here to introduce this half hour of Suspense.
Calculated to keep you in suspense.
Do you know London? Do you remember Swan's Bookshop, 12 Edgemont Row? Well, that's it. It's hard to believe that such a quiet, unassuming shop was the scene of unusual, even fantastic happenings. The only thing out of the ordinary about my bookshop, although I feel it's most appropriate, is the sign, or rather symbol, hanging above the door. An arm made of cast iron, holding aloft a flaming torch. I must confess that the sharp angle inside the elbow attracted some distinctly unbookish creatures. Birds, who found the crook of the arm a splendid place for nest building. I rather liked the birds beneath my bedroom windows, but some of my customers complained quite bitterly about their nesting over the door. So each spring, it became my wicked task to clear away the little home that was a building, and then to try in vain to make peace with the birds and my angry conscience.
Well, Mr. Swan, is it spring again?
Good morning, Constable.
Have a care up there on that ladder, sir. Steady.
Oh, it's not the ladder that's making my knees shaky. It's this monstrous crime I commit every year.
But if you didn't, Mr. Swan, how would the rest of us know it was spring, eh?
It is. A distinguished career. Christopher Swan, calendar to the neighborhood.
And very honest, sir, for all of us.
Thank you, Constable.
Begging your pardon, Mr. Swan, but you have a customer in your shop?
I do not.
Yes, I saw him go in when I was halfway down the street. He walked right under the ladder, he did, with never a care.
Brave man indeed. Thank you. Good morning. Sorry I didn't see you enter. I didn't hear the bell. May I help you?
I don't need help. Your name is Christopher Swan?
Yes.
Good morning. My name is Christopher Swan.
Oh, forgive me, I didn't quite hear.
Yes, but you did. Christopher Swan, sir. Your name, my name.
Well, how odd.
Why, people must have names. More people than names, therefore duplication. Bound to happen. My card.
Thank you. Yeah, sure enough. Christopher Swan. Mental telepathist.
Telepathist and prophet of the future.
No. Well, nevertheless, it is very odd.
Well, perhaps it is. In that case, you must save my card and show it to Margaret.
Margaret?
Your wife, sir.
Oh, no, I'm afraid you're mistaken. I have no wife, and I've never been married.
Do you suppose I'm not aware of that?
You are? Well, then, I don't see how you can...
Mr. Swan, mental telepathist and prophet of the future. The future? Yes. Margaret. Young woman. Pretty, too. Red hair.
Oh, now, really? I read a good bit about extrasensory perception. When you speak of foretelling the future...
You don't believe a word of it. Well, I don't blame you. No one believes at first.
And later?
Mr. Swan, suppose we drop the subject. I've come here simply to buy some books. Perhaps we may have a little talk in a short time after your marriage.
Now, if a thing like that happened to you, you'd probably laugh at it as I did. But then if, only 5 days later, you met a red-haired girl named Margaret, and she was pretty, and the fresh perfume of spring began to engage in mortal combat with the bachelor in you, then you might begin to believe that all nature conspired to fulfill the prophecy of Christopher Swan.
Of course I want to marry you, but we know so little about each other.
Well, I think that's excellent, Margaret. It'll be an adventure. Finding out.
Oh, you'll be disappointed in me. There's nothing to find out.
I don't intend to try. I expect to be content with you as you are. Well, Margaret?
Oh, I wish you hadn't told me about all that money you inherited. I'd like you to believe that I'm marrying you for yourself. Chris, will you be happy with me? Will you be content?
Happy with Margaret? Content? With Margaret? Less than 3 months later, anyone within earshot could have told the answer to that.
Christopher!
Yes, Margaret, I'm coming.
Christopher, this back room is a sight.
Yes, Margaret.
If only you'd do some tidying about here instead of going on as you do. Talk with the customers day in, day out. And what do you talk about? Books. Nothing but musty old books.
Oh, but that's my business, my dear.
Well, more's the pity. Why, any man with 50,000 good English pounds in Barclays Bank insists upon running an out-of-the-way little bookshop instead of going out into the world and making something of himself.
Margaret, please, there are people in the shops.
People? Loafers.
Now, see here, Margaret.
Don't you dare lose that nasty temper with me. I know you're sorry you married me, but you made a bargain. You might just as well be resigned. Till death do us part, the minister said. Till death do us part.
One day, I went up to Hampstead Heath for the fair. Oh, not so much to see the fair, but to get away from Margaret. I watched the children on the carousels, and the pearlies from Lambeth Road, and the girls in white smocks selling jellied apples. And then, suddenly, there he was, again,
Well, sink me. It's my friend, the doubter. How do you do, Mr. Swan?
Quite well, thank you.
My question, Mr. Swan, was purely rhetorical. I'm thoroughly aware that you are not doing well at all.
Wrong again, Mr. Swan.
Oh, how can you say again? You did marry a red-haired woman named Margaret, didn't you?
Now, you really believe in your powers. Candidly, I don't. The only thing thus far proven is that there are remarkable coincidences.
My dear Mr. Swan, how the thing happened is quite unimportant. All we must remember is my prediction that it would happen. I didn't say how.
Could you have done that too?
With a little more concentration, why not? For instance, let me tell you about your wife. Your wife, Mr. Swan, is a shrew and will become more of a shrew each day.
Now, please, I don't think I care to hear about
it. No, don't go, Mr. Swan. Please, not while I'm concentrating. Now, let me see. Christopher Swan, born one day, I can't quite make that out, in March 1908. Birthplace, the Manor House, Lower Orchard, Bellingdon near Chatham Bucks. 1940, removed to London, acquire bookshop. Father and mother killed in Blitz. It's a pity, Mr. Swan. You, however, inherit £50,000, right?
Yes.
£50,000, right?
Would it be impertinent to point out that you had access to this information in several publications?
Not one bit impertinent, Mr. Swan. But tell me, in which publication could I have learned that on the 9th of November this year, you will be hanged by the neck until dead?
I beg your pardon?
Don't look so taken aback, my friend. The gift of prophecy, nothing more. Ability to foresee the future.
You charlatan, do you seriously expect me to believe...
That you'll be hanged. Of course I don't expect you to believe it, Mr. Swan. Any more than you believe my first prophecy about your marriage. But you will be hanged, Mr. Swan. Pity, really a pity. On the morning of November 9th, hang by the neck. Until you are dead.
Good morning, Mr. Swan.
And a good morning to you, Constable.
Well, I hope it's better than the night I had. Oh, fair horrible, that's what it was. Oh, Mr. Swan, do you have any books that talk about spirits?
Oh, yes, sir. Some very fine ones. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Then there's the American psychologist William James. It's an odd coincidence. That's the man I'm reading now. There you are. William James, The Will to Believe.
Oh, it ain't the believing that bothers me. It's the will to leave it in the bottle.
The bottle?
Spirits, Mr. Swan. Ooh, last night.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Constable. You know, my mind is so set upon a certain... Well, let's see now. Ah, spirits. Spiritualists, here we are. Spiritus Flumenti.
Christopher!
Oh, heavens.
When will you ever clean this filthy back room?
I'll be there in half a moment, Margaret.
Not in half a moment, now.
Oh, she does have a voice that carries, don't she, Mr. Swan?
Yes, I suppose you just browse along that shelf, Constable, and help yourself to whatever you like.
Look at this place. Look at it. Nothing but old books. Dickens, Thackeray, Victor Hugo. Filthy nonsense. Filthy nonsense.
These are rare editions, Margaret. Please don't handle them like that.
I'll handle them as they deserve. I'll tear them or burn them or fling them about.
Oh, Margaret, how dare you? It happens that I love this shop and the things in it.
You'd like to die here.
What?
You said so in your sleep last night. I wish I were dead. That's what I heard you say. I don't know what's come over you, Christopher. Moody all the time. Sulking, sulking, sulking. Pity you feel so sorry for yourself.
Margaret, please. Constable Smithers can hear every word.
Let him. Let everybody hear. I've nothing to hide. I never dream about suicide. I made a mistake when I married you, but I'm trying to make the best of it. Pity you can't do the same. Pity you feel there's only one way out.
Yes, a pity. 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 The quiet was gone. The gentle, thoughtful quiet. A bookshop should be a peaceful place. I didn't remember dreaming about suicide, but I suppose I had such dreams. A man wants peace, even if it's only the peace of the grave. Oh, good morning.
Good morning. I wonder if you have St. Maud by D.H. Lawrence, I believe published by Heinemann.
Yes, Heinemann does publish Lawrence, but I'm afraid we don't have... if you'll just step over here. There's been quite a demand for Lawrence lately, and with books in short supply...
I know.
Let me see. St. Maud. There's one copy of Sons and Lovers, one Gypsy... No, no, I'm afraid we're out. May I order it for you?
No, I really prefer to look for it. It's a good excuse to go tramping about, prowling through bookshops.
Do you like bookshops?
Oh, yes.
Well, I'm glad.
Why?
Oh, nothing. I simply am glad. I'm sorry not to have had your book.
I'll find it. Thank you so much.
You might try the Ken bookshop near Victoria Station.
Thank you, I will.
Oh, another idea. Suppose you leave your name and telephone number, and then I'd be able to ring you up if you should happen to come in.
Oh, would you be good enough to do that? My name is Anne Stevens.
Mrs. Anne Stevens?
No, Miss Anne Stevens. Bayswater 3210.
Miss Anne Stevens had red hair, too. But not simply orange red like Margaret's. Her hair was like burnished copper, all warm and bright, down to her shoulders. And when she walked in the sunlight, it seemed to be splashed with gold. And I thought to myself, it's probably fragrant and soft to touch. It was only a few days later I met her again in crowded Hyde Park.
I'm sorry.
Why, Miss Stevens, I am sorry. Well, no, I'm not, really. I mean, I...
Hello.
Did I hurt you?
Of course not. It's Mrs. Swan, isn't it?
Yes. You have a remarkable memory for faces.
No more than you. You remembered me.
Oh, but that's different. I've thought about you.
Did you? How nice.
I'm trying to find a copy of St. Maud, you know. You remember that that's what you wanted.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I did find a copy that same day at the Ken bookshop, thanks to your advice.
Oh.
It's a lovely work.
I haven't read it.
Really? Oh, Mr. Swan, let me give it to you. That is so you could read it. I'll bring it to your shop.
Suppose you bring it to me here. Right here, to this very spot.
Good. Tomorrow, same time.
Tomorrow, same time. And I'll bring something I want you to read.
First, he's got a teacher to read.
Yep. Sounds like trouble to me.
Yes, indeed. Use of coinky dinky.
In the 1960s, yep. There was an animated feature of Around the World in 80 Days or something like that. And
yeah.
The main character sounds so familiar to Ronald Coleman in this.
Yeah, although Ronald Coleman, I think, passed away in 59, I think.
1958, but yeah, close.
58, okay. But yeah. Don Adams used to imitate him a lot on Get Smart. He'd go into, if I am a king, you know, type of
yes.
routine there.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, Ronald Coleman was in the theatrical production of Around the World in 80 Days, but he was a very minor character. He was someone in a railroad station or something.
Ah.
But no, it's just... go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's uncanny how his voice or intonations were used in the animated thing, and it sounds so much spot on. I could be wrong. I'm going to have to go dig up the cartoon and listen to it again.
Well, it could have been somebody doing like a McFadden. Bob McFadden did a lot of impersonation type things for not only just the cartoons, but also for comedy records in the 1960s. And
the intonation, the cadence, it was all... Spot
yeah.
on.
Well, so. Well, he in imitation of him, yeah. Ronald Coleman was wonderful as a neighbor to Jack Benny, he and his wife. And it's like when he got held up with, he had Ronald Coleman's
yeah.
Oscar and he got held up.
Yep.
But he also did a wonderful show that Don Quinn, who wrote Fever and Molly for so many years, called The Halls of Ivy. And he was a professor in that, and his wife, Benita, was his wife in that. It was a very heartwarming type show in, on radio in the mid-1950s.
Dave, have you ever panned a film from 1930 called The Devil to Pay?
I have not.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if Weirdness Really Bad Movie had ever touched on that one. He's in it.
I don't know if the, is that public domain or not.
1930?
yeah, 1930.
It's possible
still,
it's not, but...
Yeah, if it was...
Let's see.
If it was re-registered properly, yeah, it would still be in,
right.
Not in public domain. Yeah. It's just just this ahead. Year, so actually all everything from 1922 became public domain because it's or 19 actually 23. I think it's 99 years a corporation
yeah.
can hold on to the the rights. But it did have to be renewed a couple of times. Now, now I don't think you have to renew it all that often. But back then, you had to renew it.
I think that means Hunchback of Notre Dame. Well, Hunchback of Notre Dame, I think, was already in public domain, maybe. I don't know.
The Charles Laughton one?
No, the Chaney Sr.
Oh, Chaney Sr. Yeah, I think that one was in public domain, yeah.
I think that was from 22. And then, yeah.
Okay, so Samuel Goldwyn was in The Devil to Pay. They might be hanging on to it. They're pretty
yeah,
tight.
Whoever, I think, I forget who bought the Goldwyn studio, all their MGM, I think, bought the Goldwyn.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And CW
so
is just in time to hear the conclusion here of Noose of Coincidence from Suspense. Let's wrap it up.
There were many tomorrows, but never enough of them. We talked and walked and spent wonderful hours together. And so many of them were utterly silent because it wasn't necessary to talk. Because when you know someone deeply in your heart, and a red-haired woman, so that charlatan with my name could look into the future. But there were two red-haired women, and I'd met the wrong one first. He came to the shop again, late in the autumn.
Well, good morning, Mr. Swan. Still alive, I see.
Still alive?
Yes, naturally. Until November 9th. That was my prediction, Mr. Swan. Pity, pity.
What is it you want of me, please? Why do you try to impress me? I don't believe a word you say. You must know
the
that.
Prophet who gazes into the future, Mr. Swan, knows many things. Bitter things. And he knows more than anything else how we struggle against that which is ordained and which we cannot change.
Ah, rot.
If you say so. Have you a bit of paper, please? Just a bit of paper, whatever's about.
What do you mean, to write on or to wrap something?
To write a curious phrase that's been running through my mind. Oh, there, that's that. Yeah. That will do. Thank you, Mr. Swan. I'm writing down a bit from a book. You're a bookman. Perhaps you can tell me what book it's from. Wasn't like a man at all to her. There we are. Just read it aloud, please. Huh?
She could not believe it was actually happening. When she was dancing in the afternoon at Claridge's or in the evening at the Carlton, sliding about with some suave man who wasn't like a man at all to her.
Well, Mr. Swan?
I recognize it. What about it? It's from a novel by D.H. Lawrence, a novel called St. Maur. It appears somewhere in the first third of the book.
How curious. I seem to see it written on the flyleaf for the book. I seem to see something beneath it.
Oh, this is absurd.
In the same feminine hand, a delightful hand, the words, "You see, I love you, Anne." Is that correct, Mr. Swan?
Get out of here.
That book seems to be under the papers in the left-hand bottom drawer of your desk. Mr. Swan, how can you be so indiscreet?
Oh, get out.
Suppose Margaret should find it. Trouble, Mr. Swan. Trouble.
What did this mean? How could he know what Anne had written in that book? Was she in league with him? She couldn't be. Not Anne. And yet, I had fallen in love with her. A red-haired woman, as he had prophesied. The answer came soon enough.
Christopher. Constable Smithers is in the shop.
Oh, is he browsing, buying, or chatting?
He wants a copy of a book called St. Maur.
Constable Smithers wishes to read St. Maur?
By D.H. Lawrence.
To begin with, I don't believe he had ever heard of it. Second, we haven't had a copy for ages.
You should take more pains with your inventory, Christopher. There's a copy right there in the bottom left-hand drawer of your desk.
Oh, no, there's not.
I say there is. And we'll have to sell it second-hand. Some lovesick girl's written something on the fly leaf.
You know Constable Smithers doesn't want that book, Margaret.
Of course he doesn't.
I didn't think so. And there's no copy of St. Maur in the desk.
There we differ.
Well, look for yourself.
Thank you. I will. And what do you call this?
Oh, but it's impossible.
Impossible, is it? And didn't I find it here myself this morning, and didn't I read the inscription?
You put it there yourself.
Oh, now I know you've gone mad. I only suspected it before.
Yesterday, the book was in that drawer, when Swan predicted that you'd find it there. But I took it out and hid it upstairs in my bedroom. You returned it to the drawer to make his prediction come true. I didn't sleep well that night. It was the night of November the 8th. Many things had become clear. Margaret knew this fellow Swan, had known him before I met her. Between them, they had arranged his prophecies, the marriage, then the business of the book. This duplicity, this plot against me, was relieved only by one thing. Anne was not in league with Swan, and she did love me. I remember thinking, as I drifted into sleep, that if I could survive the next 24 hours, I would be safe and could free myself for Anne. When I woke, I found my hands tied to a bedpost with a silk scarf, and Margaret standing at the window that's above the entrance to the shop. Mr. Swan stood on a chair at the clothes cupboard. He was twisting a large hook into the top of the door frame.
Good morning, my boy. The 9th of November.
What prophecy?
Christopher Swan, hanged by the neck until dead. Well, you might show some fright, at least some surprise.
I am too filled with loathing for you both. So you're going to murder me?
What a frightful idea. No, you're going to commit suicide. Pity.
Don't talk to him, Kit. Get it done with.
Oh, yes, Maggie, surely. Maggie's my sister, Mr. Swan.
I knew there was some relationship between you. You have the same tricks of expression. You use the word pity so often. There's not much pity in either of you, is there?
There's a little, Mr. Swan, but it's not stronger than 50,000 pounds. There we are. Do you think that hook will hold, Mr. Swan?
Oh, come to the point. You don't really intend to murder me. What is it you want?
Maggie, he thinks you're only pretending.
Hurry, will you? It's almost time.
Oh, poor Maggie. I hope her share of your fortune will console her. Will it console you, Maggie?
Oh, shut up.
Maggie's having a touch of nerves. No, silly, Mr. Swan. There's no danger to us in this. So many of your customers have heard you threaten to commit suicide.
I doubt if one ever did.
Oh, they think they did, Mr. Swan. That's all that matters. Do you realize how many times Maggie has shouted that information from the back of the shop? Constable Smithers heard it.
Nevertheless, he knows me better than to believe.
Oh, does he? Shall I tell you what Constable Smithers will say to the coroner? He'll say, Yaldy would do himself in some day. Yaldy'd all the time from the day he was made. And there he swung, sir, with his face all black, his eyes bugged out.
Stop it! You're too fond of talking. You'll get us into trouble.
Absurd.
Mr. Margaret, you actually married me with this day in mind?
Of course I did.
And you're really going to kill me?
That's the plan.
Well, I'm sorry there isn't enough of a drop to do the thing quickly, old man. You'll be struggling for quite a bit.
Yes, I know you'll both enjoy watching me.
Not Maggie, no. Maggie's watching for the constable to turn the corner on his rounds. And then she's going to scuttle down the stairs while I do the job, lock the door from the inside, slip through the trap door in the cupboard, and away like St. Nicholas over the rooftops. Then she'll say to him, Constable, there's something wrong. There's something wrong.
Here he is, Kit, at the corner. Oh, he stopped to talk.
Are you ready, Mr. Swan? Because here you go.
Oh, don't come at me with that noose. Yeah. I can still kick. I can shout.
Well, the walls are thick, my friend. That's why you bought this house. They were built to endure.
I told you to chloroform him.
Ah, don't be stupid. Chloroform these traces.
You wanted him conscious so he could know how clever you are. Always acting. You and your silly November 9th.
No, will you stop yammering? The constable's halfway down the street.
He's still at the corner.
You better wait. Better wait till he comes this way, Margaret. They'll say you have time to do it if he finds Nicole.
Oh, thank you, Christopher. That's excellent advice.
He's not really pleased, Margaret. Look at him. He wants you to be caught.
Christopher, I'm disappointed. What childish tactics.
Is it, Swan? Is it? Look at him, Margaret. That struck home. It struck home.
Oh, I think I'll have to close your mouth, my friend.
Not while I can kick.
Maggie, throw yourself across his legs.
Don't give in, Margaret. Remember, you face the constable. He gets away over the roof.
Maggie, are you in a trance? Throw yourself across his legs.
No.
Maggie, I can't get at
him. I don't care. I don't like it.
It's too late to think about that. Where's the constable? You won't help me here. Get back to that window.
No. He's right.
Bravo, Margaret.
I'm the one who has to go down to Smithers and establish an alibi.
Yes.
I'm the one who has to answer all their questions.
That's right.
And where will you be? Where will you be? Safe. Who knows about you?
Yes, and when they hang you for murdering me, he'll inherit the loot. He'll get it all.
Oh, close your trap.
No. I haven't any protection. You hold all the cards.
Of course he does.
Maggie, you're going to ruin everything. Don't you trust your own flesh and blood?
No.
Get back to your post.
Let go of me.
Back to the window. I'll kill you both.
Let go. Fight him.
Fight him.
Don't push me. I can push too. I can push. Oh, Kit. Kit. Oh.
It's queer how he's gone, sir. You've been bound to the bed like this, and him breaking through the window and then hanging from the sign. You'll have to answer some questions, Mrs. Swan.
Hanging from the sign?
I killed him.
Yes, and I saw it happen. Saw him smash through the window and come tumbling down and catch his Adam's apple right in the very crook of the elbow, where the sparrows build a nest every spring. Right in the very crook. A very Swan caught fast, Mr. Swan. That was horrible, sir. His face black and his eyes bugged out.
Stop it! Oh, stop it!
Another prophecy come true.
What's that, Mr. Swan?
I think he could foretell the future. I believe he could. November the 9th. Christopher Swan hanged by the neck until dead. Only he had the wrong Christopher Swan.
So closes tonight's tale of Suspense. Suspense.
Okay. This is a bonus right there.
What? No credits? Oh.
Nah, we got ripped. I swear that if that wasn't Hans Conry, that was his evil twin. To me.
He had a different type of English voice than I've heard Hans Conry. And when he got more excited, it didn't sound like him. But I don't know.
It would be unusual for him to play in a straight drama. He's been in a few, but not many. He's been more, you know, comic or situation comedy.
Yeah.
I don't know,
but he's done some straight dramatic roles.
Yep,
and, excellent actor.
That he is, as is Ronald Coleman in that fine episode. And lest we forget, Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
When prophecies come true, it surprises the prognosticators as much as the victim.
You watch your language, young man.
I know.
That's right. Use words that we can understand.
Yeah, don't be prognosticating all over. He said it again. He said it again.
I did.
We're not sure. We're not sure if it was Hans or not for sure. But for some reason, I didn't cut it out, but the copy that I had the credits cut out. That's how I felt when I found that out.
Also appearing in the episode are Hans Conrad and Raymond Lawrence. So there you go.
Okay.
So it was him. Is that official?
According to Escape and Suspense Vintage Radio Broadcast of Dangerous Adventure, Urban Legends, and
Very
Tales
good.
Of Fear and Trembling, the website.
Yeah, I have been to that website a few times. I didn't think to check that one out. I just checked out the one that I got the episode from, so...
A lucky guess. Makes me want to yell.
I had pulled it up.
But don't beat your chest
after
all that snow
shoveling. I wanted to get Ronald Coleman's name correct on this because I then went digging to for all that. But, yeah, and some of the other odd on the old-time radio downloads, it doesn't mention him.
Right. He does not.
Weird.
It does mention Bill Johnstone, who was the one that really kind of took over Johnny Dollar in 55, which made it, with Bob Bailey, made it the great show that it was. Before that, it was just another hard-boiled private eye type thing.
That was interesting, but yes.
We got times left. We got some time.
Hey, I got paid. I can afford a wooden nickel today.
Oh.
You go, buddy.
Got your stimulus coin, huh?
Yeah.
And I got a syphilis test. Go figure. They got their COVID test. I got my syphilis test in the mail. It's amazing.
There you go. What a coincidence.
Drop that coin, good man.
I'm going to reach over and drop it in right now.
And it shall be the duty of the district attorney to do something about Spike Jones and the City Slickers version of Babyface.
Spotlight Review. Wonderful, wonderful.
I love how Spike always said, thank you, music lovers, so often, after they just murder a song.
What was that show with Howard Cunningham and, took place in the, come on.
Happy Days?
Happy Days. Remember the diner, Arnold's? and they had a jukebox in it. And I'm going to try to pull a Fonzie here because I'm too cheap to dig for a coin and just bump it one.
You're talking through your hat, Cat. Hat, did you say? Don't ever use the word hat to me. You people think you have problems? Well, let me tell you about my problems. It all began when I was born a month too soon. My ma was frightened by a runaway saloon. Pa was forced to be a hobo because he played the oboe. And the oboe, it is clearly understood, is an ill wind that no one blows good. I'll never forget the morning that Grandpa ate the awning to impress a pretty lady who went for men that were shady. Then Uncle Josiah lit the great Frisco fire, ran off to Hawaii with the O'Leary cow, which his loving wife resented and thereupon invented a rolling pin that strikes and then says, pow. And I'm the result of the twisted eugenics of this family of inbred schizophrenics, the end of a long, long line of bats. I design women's hats. I'm Anatole LaFaris, I shriek with chic. My hat of the week cause six divorces, three runaway horses. I'm Anatole LaFaris, my small frou-frous make heady news from Fifth Avenue casements to all back basements. Let me get my paw on a little piece of floor and voila! A chapeau at $60 a throw. It's a how I pull and you want to push it. Lacing yards and lacing all a bicycle built for 20. I'm Anatole of Paris, I must design. I'm just like wine. I go to your head. Give me thread and a needle. I itch, I twitch to stitch. I'm a glutton for cutting, for putting with a button. To snip and plug, nip and tug, fix and trim, crown and brim, tote that bud, lift that veil. And why do I sew each new chapeau with a style that must look positively grim in? Strictly between us, entre nous, I hate women.
Wow, that was kind of ahead of its time. The late, great Danny Kaye.
Yep. Huh. And, one night he was on Larry King and they talked the whole night about baseball. Danny Kaye was a big baseball fan. He was one of the people instrumental in getting the original Seattle Pilots in Seattle. But he, when that team moved out, he didn't have anything to do with the Mariners.
Yeah. Well, real quick, tomorrow night we're doing stuff. Because we have one more prediction for you with CBS Radio Mystery Theater, The Halliday. Halliday or Holiday?
Halliday.
Prediction.
Halliday.
Holiday.
Halliday.
It's my, it's Halliday. My eyes. They're going. They're going
the
with
Holiday
the
for Halliday.
Yeah. And that's at 6:30 tomorrow night, Eastern. And then right after that, we have...
if all goes well, at 8 p.m., Eastern time. Horrible Heart is starring Garlicle Blabley.
Yeah. I just
saw this really quick. I sat in my haircutter's chair and said, make me look sexy. She started drinking.
And cut off her head. All right, so there's
yeah,
so, a lot of it.
Yeah, there you go.
Whoa.
Started drinking and cut off my head. All right. Twice as sexy. Okay.
Yes, as Fogsbane said, thank you everyone for listening tonight. We'll see you tomorrow night at 6:30. Bye.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come. come alone.
Ring-a-doo!
Ooh, very good.
Pretty darn close. Pretty darn
very
close.
Very good.
Oh, we had to talk like an auctioneer at the end, but we got it in there.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
All right, well, Dale is slipping. I'm slipping, too.
Is it out?
I'm going to cut out.
Well,
I know how I feel. I don't know how you feel.
Because of all the ice out there. That's what.
No, I'm serious. I am run down. Is it that obvious?
No, you made a comment somewhere that said.
Oh, yeah, I had a little sugar.
In a group,
I had a sugar issue there, but. Now I'm getting sleepy.
All right. Well, in that case, I guess we shall all meet here again next Friday if we don't see you here tomorrow, Mr. Gar. And
yeah, we'll see what
at
happens.
This point, we turn off the lights, hit the three spotlights, and into the center walks Mr. Jimmy Durante.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night.
I guess he didn't like good night.
What
more
does this say but good night? We've had a few laughs.
Good job, boy.
And it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same. And ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever you are.